Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is a live recording from the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference.
I'm your host, Nicole Taylor, and you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We are broadcasting a recording live from the Roger Smith Hotel at the 2013 Roger Smith Cookbook Conference. And in our pop-up studio as we look out on Lexington and what is this? 47th Street. I have Adrian Miller in the
What's
studio.
Up?
Adrian, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you. Good to
I
be here.
I feel like, wait a minute, let me ask you this. Have you been on my show before?
I've never been. Well, I called in one time for a hot second. It was one of your anniversary shows,
I think. Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, this is the first time on it. So
I'm glad. And you came to the pop-up studio. The next time you're in town, you're going to have to come out to Brooklyn, to Bushwick.
Okay.
And come to the studio.
Sounds good.
So how are you loving the New York energy?
You know, I'm from Denver, Colorado, so anytime I come out here, it's like a shot of adrenaline. Just the energy, the people, you know, it's just cool.
So the weather is not a shocker to you?
No, well, that humidity, though, gets me, because Denver, we got a dry cold, so it's not as
brutal.
Wait,
it's a humidity? You feel it?
Yeah. It feels really cold to me.
I have no, you know, I'm from down south.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what you're talking about. I just know it's cold.
All right. But I hear a blizzard's coming. So, you know, that's more like home to me.
Yeah. It's called a nor'easter, whatever that is.
Yeah. Okay.
So what have you done since I saw you Facebooking some of your eating adventures. What all have you done?
Yeah. So I'm staying with a friend in Brooklyn. So this is actually the first time that I've ever really spent a lot of time in Brooklyn, because I usually just come to Manhattan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I like the Brooklyn vibe. So I walked around. So I went to Fat Sal just to get my barbecue on, and I was impressed.
Yeah.
That pork belly?
Oh, you like the pork belly?
Yeah.
I love the beans with the burnt ends.
Yeah, the burnt end beans. Yeah, that was our favorite side. But the pork belly,
Yeah, the food is good. What else do you have on your list to check out?
So after I get done talking to you, I'm going to head back to Brooklyn and go to Mitchell's. Because when I was working on my book, and I know we're going to talk about that, I hit Harlem really hard, but I didn't check out Brooklyn, so I want to check out the Brooklyn soul food.
I think we forgot to mention, we didn't say a lot about who you are. I mean, I see you as so many different things. We first met down at Southern Foodway Alliance Conference. A lot of people know you as the barbecue expert.
Yeah.
A lot of people know you as being, you know, an ex-political analyst.
Mm-hmm.
And also an expert and a writer on, you know, black food ways and really chefs, black chefs or cooks in the White House.
Right, right. Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
No, you got the main stuff. So, yeah. So lately, you know, I just wrote this book on the history of soul food that's going to come out this fall. It's called Soul Food, The Surprising Story of American Cuisine, One Plate at a Time. University of North Carolina Press is going to put that out, so I'm looking forward to that. And so now my next thing is I'm working on Black Chefs in the White House, so trying to pitch it as a TV show.
Cool.
Do a companion book and a companion mobile phone app where you could pull up a president and or enter a president or an ingredient and get a White House, an actual White House menu.
Oh, wow. That is exciting. Congratulations
Thank you.
On that. So I saw on the list of panels for the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference, it actually starts today. Today, I think right now, they're in a series of workshops that are happening. And then tomorrow, there are a few dozen or probably a dozen or so workshops. There's a workshop about White House cooks.
Yeah, and that was the primary draw that brought me to the conference, because there's a lot of interesting workshops or panels and workshops, but the White House cooking one, I just wanted to hear that panel especially. So I said, I got to roll out to New York just to hear that. So
I had the pleasure of, was it last year or 2 years ago when you were here at the Virginia Club?
Oh, that was last year, yeah.
And you did a great discussion on food and the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And this being Black History Month, I've really been trying to focus all my shows, at least the last segment or so, on reflections of Black History Month. And then if you follow me on social media, I've been tweeting a cookbook a day by a African-American or Black cookbook author.
Uh-huh.
I just want to hear your thoughts about cookbooks, how they inspire you, particularly cookbooks that are written by Black people. And and just a bit about your favorite White House chef or cook that people may not know about.
Okay, so with the cookbooks, the thing that really got me on my journey about cookbooks is a guy named David Lupton. He's no longer with us. But when the early days when I thought about writing a history of soul food, I got to him through some internet research, and I talked to him, and he was an African-American cookbook bibliographer. Wow. So I'm thinking that dude had 50 cookbooks tops, right? And I contacted him on the internet, and he said, no, I got 500. I said, what? And he said, yeah, and some of them go back to the 1800s. I said, you got cookbooks by black people from the 1800s?
Wow.
And he said, yeah. And he was gracious enough to share his outline, the rough outline of his bibliography with me. Blew me away. So I'm one of those cats that actually reads cookbooks.
Yes.
Yeah, as much as like cooking out of them. And I love the old cookbooks because they actually took time to set up the recipe and give some folklore and give it some context. Because a lot of cookbooks, when you get to 20th century, they're just listing the recipe, you know, and maybe the person who contributed it. But there's no sense of the family or why they cook these mm-hmm. things at certain times. So I love those cookbooks. So one of my favorites was the Picayune Creole cookbook from the early 1900s. And that was a tribute to a lot of black cooks. But then you see a lot of high-end cookbooks. So you had these famous chefs who were mm-hmm. making food for wealthy people. And then you have a lot of home cooks, too, that were doing their thing. Of the recent cookbooks, probably The Soul of Southern Cooking by Kathy Starr. I don't know if you've read that cookbook.
No. When did that come out?
I want to say that came out like 2002, 2003.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly. But that's a good example of kind of just real kind of country cooking. I just thought it was a real good contrast to kind of Edna Lewis's The Taste of Country Cooking, because it's kind of like a different context, because Edna Lewis is from Virginia, but here you have a Mississippi cook showing how mm-hmm. they did things in her area. So
who would you say, before you get to the White House stuff, who would you say is a rising star in terms of black cookbook authors?
So I think it's Chef Bryant Terry with the vegan soul vibe, but I think he's getting a lot out there on how, even though we call it vegan soul, it's really a return to kind of old-fashioned African-American cooking, because we ate a lot of vegetables, meat was used sparingly, you know. So I think he's probably the one that's really
definitely
getting the most ink right now.
Yes, we love Bryant Terry.
Yeah.
You know, hot grease.
Other than that, you know, I don't find a lot of people writing about soul food. You have some celebrity cookbooks, and I guess, I don't know, is Beyonce coming out with one?
Beyonce can't cook, Adrian. You didn't know that?
I did not know that. I didn't notice.
Yeah, she said that her mother can cook, but she never, I guess since she, you know, started being an entertainer so young, she never learned how to cook. But apparently her mother can burn.
Okay. But see, I thought she was coming out with some kind of cookbook, though, no?
I didn't hear that. I know that Khalees is a celebrity that's supposed to be really into food and supposed to be coming out with a cookbook. I haven't seen that yet.
Oh.
There are a few other celebrities, but I haven't seen them.
Yeah, so I just don't know of anyone who's like dedicated to just putting the word out about soul food as we understand it. I just don't know. And I think that's a shame, because I think it's one of America's greatest cuisines.
How would you define soul food? I know, you know, we were talking off air a little bit about soul food junkies and all the great buzz that's going around that. Mm-hmm. How do you define soul food?
So my first cut at it is it's the traditional food of African Americans. And the next level of it is really the food of those who left the Deep South for other parts of the country. And I think that's the best way to describe the cuisine. And I think low country cuisine and Creole cuisine is something different. All of those are African American heritage cuisines, but I think they're just a little different than soul food.
I totally agree. So speaking of soul food, let's transition to food in the White House,
mm-hmm.
and particularly the role of the African American cook mm-hmm. in the White House.
Yeah. So in my research for my soul food book, I found out that every president has had an African American cook, which either as the head
cook. Every president.
All the way back to George Washington. George Washington had two cooks. One was a free man named Samuel Francis. So you've heard of Francis Tavern down here in Wall Street?
Exactly.
Yep, he's the namesake for that. Biracial guy from Haiti. So he was cooking for Washington. And then he had an enslaved cook named Hercules. And actually Hercules' son, Richmond, was also a cook for Washington. Hercules could burn so good that he actually sold his leftovers and made $200 a year. And this is in the 1790s. That's how good he could cook.
Wow.
I know. So there's a lot more coming out about Washington's cooks and Jefferson's cooks, but there's been a long line of African-American chefs. Even Obama has African-Americans on his culinary team, but they're assistant chefs. They're not running the kitchen.
Tell me the names. I feel like one name of a guy I've heard of before, but I don't see someone wrote an article about him.
Yeah, so I hope I get this right. So Adam Colick is one, Denzel Benjamin. And Tafari Campbell, I think, is
Tafari Campbell is the person that I heard. Does he have a connection to the South? It's something about him. I don't know how I know him or what his story is.
Yeah, see, there's not a lot of information about these guys, so I'm hoping at some point I can interview them as part of this project on Black Chefs in the White House, but I just don't know much about them. They've been pictured in Michelle Obama's book, American Grown, but there's not a lot about them, so I hope to get their story out.
Very exciting. Yeah. One other person... Later today, I'm actually interviewing Addie Broyles, who is a Austin-based food writer, editor, and blogger. But I remember she wrote a story about, I think her name is Zephra.
Oh, yeah, Zephra Wright.
Zephra Wright. And I remember you playing an audio of her talking about her recipe and Lyndon Baines being Lyndon Baines Johnson's cook.
Right, yeah. So, she started cooking for the Johnsons back in the 40s. Lady Bird went down to Marshall, Texas, and just asked her friends for a recommendation of a cook, and that's how they got connected. So she cooked for Johnson all through his rise in power in the Senate, and when he became president, he brought her into the White House as his personal cook. And she actually inspired this 1964 Civil Rights Act, because at the time they would drive back between D.C. and Texas, and Zephra Wright and her husband, Sam, could never really go in to the restaurants.
Wow.
And so Johnson, when he was lobbying members of Congress, he would use her experiences in the Jim Crow South to persuade these congressmen to get on board. He said, look, the president's cook should not be treated like this, should be treated like a human being. And from what I've read, when he signed the act, he gave her one of the pens and said, you deserve this as much as anyone.
Wow.
Yeah.
One point of clarification. Mm-hmm. I think I remember reading that not until maybe Miss Jackie Kennedy became in the office that we started using the word chef in terms of White House. What did that mean for all of these black cooks who are, you know, cooking the personal food for the White House family or presidential family? What does that mean and how does that play out now?
Yeah, so the change in title was from Jackie Kennedy. So she started in 1960 and she called it the executive chef. And so there were black cooks on staff. In fact, there was a black cook before they hired the French cook, René Verdon. There was a black cook on staff, and I'm just forgetting her name right now. She came with them from Georgetown. But before that, they were just called head cook. And, you know, they were just called cooks. Had the same skill, same level of artistry, right? But they were just called cooks. So that's why today when you hear people talking about Obama's current chef, Chrisetta Comerford, who's Filipina, when they say that she's the first person of color, first woman to be executive chef at the White House, they're technically correct. But you've had black women running the kitchen in the 1800s all the way up through the 1950s.
And one last question before we leave. Mm-hmm. I just think about when you just spoke about Christina Comerford. Back in, was it the 80s or 90s, Patrick Clark.
Yeah.
Chef Patrick Clark, who is now deceased, who was, you know, a New York institution here. Mm-hmm. There were so many rumors buzzing. I don't remember this. I mean, so many rumors about him being the first black White House chef.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about that, about his legacy? And his son is actually, I'm actually going to an event next week at the James Beard House where his son, Preston Clark, is going to be cooking.
Okay.
Yeah. But what are your thoughts about his legacy?
So my understanding is that President Clinton offered him the job.
Oh, really?
But he didn't take it because he wasn't going to make enough money. I mean, he had a young family, and so that was one of the reasons. Because you don't get paid a lot as a White House chef compared to what you could make out in industry. So, you know, you trade off the prestige for making money. So it was kind of a practical decision. So I would have loved to have him, because I have his cookbooks, you know, the memory cookbook that mm-hmm. his friends put together. So I think he had a great legacy as an accomplished chef, and it would have been a nice footnote to, you know, bring him into the White House. But if I have a second, I wanted to answer your question about a chef that people probably don't know about.
Yeah.
Her name was Daisy Bonner. And so she cooked for the president, President Roosevelt, when he traveled to Warm Springs, Georgia. Because of his polio, he would go down there for the hot springs. And so she was on loan from a local family. And she would cook dishes for him, like Country Captain, which is the kind of chicken curry dish from the South. And the other thing that she would make for him that he loved was broiled pig's feet. In fact, they have the shopping list from his last week of life on display there, and it has four pig's feet.
Wow, very interesting.
And she was cooking a cheese souffle timed for his for him to eat for lunch, and then he had the massive cerebral hemorrhage.
Oh, wow.
And she was so moved by his death that she's the one who called the White House to inform them of his death, and then she also wrote on the wall in pencil, Daisy Bonner cooked the first and last meal for President Roosevelt.
Wow.
In this place, yeah.
Very touching.
It's still on the kitchen wall.
Very touching. Adrian, I'm so glad you stopped by.
Thanks.
And I'm excited about your book, and I'm really excited about the app and the additional work that you're doing around black cooks and chefs in the White House.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoy the All Roger right. Smith Cookbook Conference.
Okay.
Yeah, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks for inviting me. It was great to talk to you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.